Laudator Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines, this Saturday, March the 22nd, the UN marks World Water Day, which this year focuses on protecting glaciers, which store about 70% of the world's fresh water. Turkish authorities have detained 343 people during overnight protests in several cities. But first, the Pope is scheduled to greet the crowd outside Gemelli Hospital on Sunday, March 23rd. In the Vatican, I'm Kelsey Gussie. On Saturday morning, the Holy See press office announced the Pope is planning to greet the crowd outside Rome's Gemelli Hospital and give his blessing on Sunday, March 23rd, shortly after 12 p.m. The statement said the text of the Angelus will be shared as it has been the last few weeks. While the doctors have not yet given any indication as to when the Pope would be discharged, this greeting on Sunday would be his first appearance since he was hospitalized on February 14th. This news comes after the most recent health update shared Pope Francis' continued improvements, both in his respiratory and motor functions. Despite being in the hospital for the last 5 weeks, the Pope has continued to work, sending messages to pilgrim groups, concelebrating Mass, and even sending a voice message on March 6th to thank everyone for their testimonies of love and solidarity. And on Saturday evening at 6 p.m., members of the Pope's medical team will be holding a briefing for journalists on the Pope's health. This will only be the second such briefing since the Pope was hospitalized last month. You can follow the briefing live on the Vatican News website and on our YouTube channel. The briefing will be in Italian and without simultaneous translation into English, although the last press conference, the doctors did speak briefly in English in answer to one question. And continuing with Pope Francis' health and his updates, Pope Francis has expressed his joy over the prayers of support he has received while in hospital. As Joseph Tulloch reports, in a message released today, the Pope told pilgrims from dioceses across Italy that he is overjoyed to know that they are united with him in prayer.
In a brief message from Rome's Gemelli Hospital, Pope Francis today greeted groups of pilgrims from dioceses across Italy who are currently in Rome for the Jubilee year. These pilgrimages, the Pope said, express the unity which joins the pilgrims as one community around their local bishops and around the Bishop of Rome. The pilgrimages also demonstrate, the Pope added, the pilgrims' commitment to accepting Jesus' invitation to enter through the narrow door. Love, the Pope said, always fulfills these dual functions of, on the one hand, uniting us, and, on the other, helping us to grow together. For this reason, he explained, God had brought the pilgrims together at the tomb of St. Peter, from which, the Pope said, you will be able to set off even stronger in faith and more united in charity. The Pope then thanked the pilgrims for their prayers for his health. Recently, I have very much felt the support that comes from your closeness, the Pope said, particularly the prayers with which you have been accompanying me. Even though I can't be with you physically, the Pope continued, I want to express my great joy in knowing that you are united to me and united amongst yourselves in the Lord Jesus. Pope Francis drew his message to a close, as he so often does, by assuring the pilgrims of his prayers and asking for theirs in return. I bless you and pray for you, the Pope said. Please do not forget to pray for me. I'm Joseph Tulloch.
An ecumenical prayer service took place on Friday evening, remembering Pope Francis and continuing his recovery, and all those infirm and suffering. The Roman parish of San Lorenzo hosted the celebration, located just down the street from St. Peter's Basilica. Organizers included the Teze community, the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity, and in collaboration with other denominations. Thaddeus Jones has this report.
The ecumenical prayer service for the health of Pope Francis and all the sick took place on Friday afternoon in the Roman Church of San Lorenzo in Piscibus, home to the International Youth Center. The opening prayer read, Living God, we come before you from different Christian denominations to pray for the sick and the suffering, and for the health of all the leaders of the churches, and in this moment for your servant, Francis, Bishop of Rome, at this time when he's afflicted by illness. organized by the Taizé Community and the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity and the Office for Ecumenism and Dialogue of the City, in collaboration with the Anglican Center and the Ecumenical Methodist and Reformed Churches offices here in Rome. The prayer session communed with the psalm, "Bless the Lord, O my soul," followed by a passage from St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians, read in Italian, English, German, Spanish, and French. The Prayer of the Faithful was also recited in several languages, with intentions raised by representatives of the churches alongside some young people. In particular, prayers were offered for all the sick, for those who help them, and for all the medical staff, with a petition to the Holy Spirit to grant Pope Francis the strength and peace he needs during his illness. A prayer for peace was also included, especially for the people of Ukraine, the people of Gaza, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Haiti, Nicaragua, and every place where war marks our troubled world. Prayers were also raised for those affected by global warming and the results of the exploitation of natural resources, with the hope that humanity becomes increasingly aware of its responsibility for the care of our common home, a gift from God. A final intention was dedicated to the unity of Christians, that they may be one. Before the final blessing given together with representatives of the various churches, prayer was offered once again for the Lord to be with Pope Francis in his illness. I'm Therese Jones.
On Saturday, Israel escalated tensions with airstrikes in southern Lebanon. Israel says it hit dozens of Hezbollah rocket launchers and a command center in southern Lebanon after rockets were fired from there into Israel for the first time since November's ceasefire. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he had told the Israeli Defense Forces to act forcefully against dozens of terror targets. Nathan Morley reports.
The attacks hit areas near Tulin, Kfar, Maliki, Melita and the Wadi al-Hujia Valley. A residential building in Tulin was destroyed, killing one and injuring three. Earlier, Israel intercepted rockets aimed at the northern town of Matula, with emergency services reporting no casualties. Lebanon's army said it had dismantled three improvised rocket launchers north of the Litani River, and that troops remained in southern Lebanon to maintain security and stability. The incident comes amid ongoing tensions over a US and French brokered ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah, which took effect on the 27th of November, ending more than a year of hostilities linked to the Gaza conflict. Under the truce, Israel was to withdraw from disputed Lebanese territory, though Lebanese officials say it still occupies five border posts beyond the February 18th deadline. In a statement issued after the strikes, Israel's military said it targeted Hezbollah infrastructure, accusing the Iran-backed group of operating from civilian areas. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Defense Minister Israel Katz vowed a robust response, with Mr. Katz stressing that Lebanon was responsible for, quote, all aggression originating from its soil. The United Nations interim force in Lebanon, UNIFIL, urged restraint, warning that further escalations could undermine the fragile diplomatic progress. Saturday's rocket fire marked the first such incident from Lebanon since early December, with both sides blaming each other for breaches of the ceasefire. Separately, the Israeli Defense Forces said on Friday night that it struck the Palmyra and Tiras T-4 military airbase in Syria. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
U.S. President Donald Trump's administration has said it will revoke the temporary legal status of more than 500,000 migrants from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. Those migrants have been warned to leave the country before their permits and deportation shield are canceled on April 24th. The 530,000 migrants were brought into the U.S. under a Biden-era sponsorship process known as CHNV that was designed to open legal migration pathways. Trump suspended the program once he took office. It is unclear how many of these migrants have been able to secure another status in the interim that would allow them to stay in the U.S. legally. The program was launched under President Joe Biden in 2022, first covering Venezuelans before it was expanded to other countries. It allowed the migrants and their immediate family members to fly into the U.S. if they had American sponsors and remain for 2 years under a temporary migration status known as parole. The Biden administration had argued that this would help curb illegal crossings at the southern border and allow for better vetting of those entering the country. And in other world news, Turkish authorities have detained 343 people during overnight protests in several cities against the detention of Istanbul Mayor Ekrem Imamoglu. a key opposition figure in the country's political landscape. As Linda Bordoni reports, the major was detained on charges of corruption and aiding terrorist groups just days before he was due to be announced as candidate for the 2028 presidential election.
Demonstrations took place in more than a dozen cities, including Istanbul and the capital Ankara. The Turkish Interior Ministry said the detentions were made to prevent disrupting of public order and warned that authorities would not tolerate chaos and provocation. The protests, which started on Wednesday when İmamoğlu was detained, have been mostly peaceful, with tens of thousands of Turks having taken to the streets to condemn the move they claim is politically motivated. Ekrem İmamoğlu heads the Republican People's Party and, as the sole opposition presidential candidate, is President Tayyip Erdogan's main political rival. His arrest came just before he was to be officially declared the only official contender in the 2028 presidential election. Not only was he accused of corruption and favouring terrorism, the government revoked his university diploma, placed him in detention, and exposed him to the risk of political ban. Much of the ensuing opposition activity has centred around universities, and many of those connected to the demonstrations are reportedly finding their social media accounts suspended. The crackdown comes amid recent developments in neighbouring Syria and in the wider Middle Eastern region, where analysts say Ankara has gained significant ground as a potential force for stabilisation and cooperation with the United States, and reflects a broader global shift. I'm Linda Bordoni.
March 22nd marks World Water Day, which was established by the United Nations to raise awareness on the vital importance of fresh water for our planet. And to tell us more, Lisa Zengarini reports.
According to the World Meteorological Organization and the World Glacier Monitoring Service, five of the past 6 years have recorded the fastest glacier retreat on record. The period from 2022 to 2024 saw the largest three-year loss of glacier mass ever documented, and in many regions once considered to have eternal ice are now expected to vanish before the end of the 21st century. As highlighted by the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres in his message for this year's World Water Day, the loss of glaciers is not merely an environmental concern. It has far-reaching economic, social and geopolitical consequences. The depletion of these ice masses threatens water supplies for millions of people who rely on glacial meltwater, particularly during the hottest and driest seasons. In the short term, increased glacier melt intensifies the risk of natural disasters such as floods, droughts and landslide, impacting billions of people in cities and rural areas alike. One of the most alarming consequences of glacier loss is its contribution to rising sea levels, which will in turn increase climate migration. Researchers estimate that between 2000 and 2023, glaciers lost over 6.5 billion tons of ice, causing an 18 millimeters rise in sea level. While this figure may appear insignificant, each additional millimeter exposes hundreds of thousands of people to the risk of flooding and to saltwater intrusion. Low-lying communities and entire countries are facing existential threats, while competition for water and land is aggravating tensions. This makes climate action all the more urgent, Guterres said, urging all states to deliver strong national climate action plans and to increase funding for climate adaptation and resilience. I am Lisa Zingarini.
That's it for today. Many thanks go to Gabriele Di Domenico in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Kelsey Gussie.